Hey, good Sunday evening, everybody. Welcome into the Rocky Top Rewind. I am Eric Kane alongside Brent Hubbs here at VolQuest.com on the YouTube channel. We call this show the Rocky Top Rewind every Sunday night during football season, except the bye week, so no Rocky Top Rewind next week. But when we recap, we look back on Tennessee the past weekend and look ahead to what's to come, and there's plenty to talk about. And big thanks to our friends for presenting this show, and that is Spivey King and Spivey LLP. If you got a problem, let them find a solution for you. That is TN Trial Lawyers, specializing in criminal defense, personal injuries, accidents, all that and more. 80 years of combined experience. 423-245-4185. That is 423-245-4185 for a free consultation. You go check them out online at SpiveyKingAndSpiveyLLP.com. Spivey King and Spivey LLP, TN Trial Lawyers. Appreciate them, as always, for being a part of the show. 25-15, Tennessee goes to Oklahoma. First SEC game of the season, first SEC game ever for Oklahoma. And a lot of talk, a lot of the different opinions from fans. But at the end of the day, Brent Hubbs, you go on the road, you win on the road, you come back to Knoxville, you are 4-0 heading into the bye week. This is about as good of a start as anybody could have envisioned heading into the season.
Well, I mean, you can look at this game. First of all, the win's the win. You take the win and you run with the win. And I know there's going to be a ton of comments over here on the side about, you know, coming off the gas pedal too early and, you know, not being aggressive enough and all those types of things. I'm sure there'll be plenty of that. But if you'd have told somebody that Tennessee was going to go to Norman, Oklahoma, with Nico making his first career road start, and you're going to play that game with Larry Johnson and Dane Davis as your two tackles, and you were going to win 25-15 and really be in control of the football game, I think pretty much all the way through. I mean, I know the first quarter was a little bit, not back and forth, but, you know, that Tennessee had no separation, but dominated the second and third quarter and obviously, you know, held on in the fourth quarter. I think anybody and anybody in their right mind would have taken that one and ran with it. And so I think that's a high quality win. I thought the management of the game by this coaching staff, once they got the lead and understood where they were. And I think Josh Heupel admitted that after the game, right? Like, hey, where we were, you know, protection-wise and with the lead, the way we were going to get beat was to be, you know, super aggressive and turn it over again or throw a pick or something like that. No point in taking those chances. We'll lean on the defense, and that's exactly what they did.
Yep, they did. The story yet again coming out of this football game, coming out of many football games to begin this year, is Tennessee's defense. And, you know, the job's not done. You're four games into the year. You're only one game into SEC play. So there's a lot of football left. But what Tim Banks has done is incredible. You know, dating back to last year, we all know the streak. It finally came to an end in the fourth quarter last night. But it went up to 19 straight quarters. Tennessee's defense failed to allow an offensive touchdown against them, dating back to the fourth quarter and the regular season finale last year against Vanderbilt, the last time that happened prior to last night. Tennessee was leading 22-3 with 2 minutes left in the third quarter for Oklahoma to surpass 100 yards of total offense. Tennessee racked up double-digit TFLs, three sacks. Oklahoma was 3 of 16 on third down conversions. They got a lot of first downs, but they weren't coming on third downs. they were picking up first downs on first and second down. This defense, again, you know, we talk about it every week. You wrote about in the 10 things. You say, hey, I write about the defensive line every single week, but just it continues to show up, show out, travel. And I thought we all kind of envisioned this defense taking a step and being better because of that defensive front. Again, knowing there's more football to be played, I still don't think we, or at least me, thought they were going to be this good. It's been fun to watch, man. And Tennessee absolutely leaned on them last night, and the defense is the reason why they won.
Well, if you just said, you know, nobody would have thought that through four games, James Pierce would not have a sack.
Yeah.
If you'd have said that, you'd have said, well, this defense is not playing well. There's issues there. But there's a ton of other guys to step out and play. But for me, I think when I look at this defense, it's about the growth at the linebacker position. And it's the arrival of Jermon McCoy in the secondary and what that's meant. Now, I say that with the understanding of it all, that it all starts up front with the defensive line. But we all believed that this defensive line was going to be a really good, a really talented, really effective defensive line. The growth that they've taken at linebacker, I mean, where Arian Carter is right now compared to where he was game one at that position is pretty doggone impressive. Keenan Peely, you understand why Tennessee was so devastated when that injury occurred a year ago because of how well he's playing. And then they've got a guy that's – I don't know why he kept throwing it throwing it his way last night. I mean, they didn't as the game progressed, but I mean, they went after McCoy pretty early, and he comes out of there with – they throw at him four times. He doesn't give up a reception. He's got an interception and a pass breakup on fourth down. So, basically, he took two possessions from Oklahoma. I mean, he's just playing great corner right now. I mean, it's a lot of fun to watch. I mean, for all the excitement of put the offense out on the field because it's a splash play here or there, you kind of want to watch this defense play because of just how violent they're playing, how fast they're playing, and how many bodies they're playing out there. It's a lot of fun to watch them.
Yeah, it's been a blast. And when you run through some issues on the other side of the football, as Logan points out, our friend Logan, saying, hey, we need to get Jesse Perry some reps. You're not trying to clown the guys that are out there last night, but, you know, more talent needs to be developed and get out there. And, I think that's absolutely fair. You had Lance Hurd that did not go. He was out, didn't make the trip. John Campbell started a right tackle, but, you know, he played, you know, 30 snaps. He's yet to make it through four quarters of football for Tennessee this year. So, I mean, Dane Davis started. He flip-flopped between left and right tackle, and then Larry Johnson went in. So it was a lot of Dane Davis, a lot of Larry Johnson. Dane Davis, he had a rough night last night for sure, and he'd be the first one to tell you. But he's played a lot of football for you. He's played in big games, big moments. You know what you have in Dane Davis. You don't have a clue what you have in Larry Johnson. Last night was the most he's ever played. Jesse Perry's a young guy that's probably the next closest. You know, Bennett Warren's a little far off, and of course some of these younger guys. But because of where you were with the two strip sacks and putting it in harm's way, and because you ran for 7 yards in the first quarter, ran for 73 yards in the second quarter, and kind of where you were running the football heading into halftime, and the way that defense was, man, it made all the sense in the world to say, okay, well, let's get the win no matter what. I mean, it wasn't fun to watch at points in times, and in times, even on third and six, third and seven, when they're handing it off, I'm sitting there like, I mean, come on, throw the football, right? But they went in there and said, we're going to get this win no matter what. We're not going to have any unnecessary risks. And you know, Brent, I thought, I want to get your take on the tackles, but also I thought, you know, for everything that was going through Heupel's mind going back to Norman, you know, going home, getting the win, all that type of stuff, for him to sit back and say, I mean, he wanted to win this game by 100 and score 100, and his offense looking great. For him to sit there and say, I'm going to take the ball out of my offense's hands. I'm going to let my defense win this game. I thought that showed some great maturity for a guy that we've seen at times. He's been an emotional play caller, right? I thought that showed a lot last night, saying, okay, well, we know how much he wants this and he wants to score and show off his offense. Just let his defense go win that thing. That kind of jumped out to me last night.
Yeah, I mean, again, I thought they managed it well. Somebody posted earlier, I think you threw it up on the screen about, you know, it was a General Nealon type game, and it really was. I mean, Tennessee won the kicking game. They made the fewest mistakes at the end of the day. They outlasted them for 60 minutes. I thought they tackled well. I mean, they did everything in the maxims that you read before you go out there. They did well. I want to get back to Logan's question about young tackles and development there. I think that's why this week is imperative for Tennessee. I mean, it's imperative on the practice field, because if you're Tennessee, you have to look at this, and I'm not disparaging anybody, but you have to look at this and say, okay, we're in a world where we're not sure, you know, what exactly is going on with our two starting tackles. Okay. And John Campbell being one of those hasn't really made it through a first half. So you better have more than two capable tackles going out there to play. So guess what? This week, look, you're hoping to get Lance Hurd back. I think you believe you'll get Lance Hurd back, but you also believe Lance Hurd was going to be ready to go in Oklahoma, and he wasn't. You have to prepare now. I've got to get two more tackles to be serviceable, whatever that is, okay? You have to go into that mindset, and you have to approach that as, all right, what are our options here? Jesse Perry appears to be the next option. Listen, you weren't going to put him in that ball game last night, okay? I mean, he wasn't ready for that moment. You were trying to get out of there, so you weren't going to – I mean, that was not a, hey, let's get Jesse some reps night, okay? I'm not saying you do that necessarily at Arkansas, but you have to use this open date to maximize the opportunities and to speed up the process for both he and Bennett Warren, because you've got to have those guys ready. You've got to have somebody ready to go there. And that's the one criticism of this offensive line is the development of that position. Now, those two guys haven't been here long. Okay. So you can't say, well, they haven't developed there. Those two haven't developed. I mean, Jesse Perry's come a long way in 9 months. He's just got to go faster now. Bennett Warren's doing some nice things, looks like a talented prospect, but he's only been here since July. Well, guess what? You just got on the accelerated program because you have to have some depth. You've got to manufacture some depth there because you're not moving Spraggins out to play tackle, right? You're not moving Andre Kurich out there to play tackle or Kurich out there to play tackle. I mean, I know he lined up at tackle when he was at Texas, but I mean, he's not bumping out there. So you don't have anybody you're playing regularly who you can move out there if you have some kind of injury or somebody's really struggling. That's why you got to accelerate with those two young guys starting on the practice field, Monday afternoon or Monday morning, Tuesday morning, whatever the case may be. You've got to speed that thing up in a hurry.
Yeah, I would agree. Bye weeks are a chance to not just kick your feet up and rest. I mean, it's a chance to get healthy, but still work week, still a great opportunity for some of those young guys like Jesse Perry, as you're mentioning, maybe some guys on the defensive side of the football. I want to get your take on this one, and we hope to be catching up with the VFL and Jonathan Wade here in the next couple of minutes, so stay tuned for that. I want to get your thoughts on this. The defense obviously, balled out, played really well. Someone that just continues to flash for me, Brent, and again, I don't know the playbook. I don't know where you're supposed to be every single play, but he's just always laying the wood, and that's Jacoby Thomas. Had a couple hard hits last night. Again, had a forced fumble, I believe. A guy that's just making plays. What did you think of Jacoby Thomas's plays? And Tim Banks is going above and beyond at the rotations of the safety spot. Christian Charles played a ton of snaps, and that surprised me last night because he's dealing with some injuries as well.
Yeah, and listen, I mean, we all said for 6 months when Tim Banks talked back in the spring about, hey, going to play more guys at safety, going to rotate more guys back there. Every one of us said, hey, I'm going to have to believe it to see it. Well, guess what? For four games, you've seen it. You've seen it in every scenario, home games, neutral site games, close games, blowout games. They are rotating guys. They have no concerns and no hesitation to rotate those guys. Obviously, with the injury to Boo Carter, it was a bit more Christian Harrison last night, the most that he's played. But, yeah, I mean, it's playing. I was a little surprised Christian Charles went instead of Farouk based on the fact that Charles had been dealing with the shoulder. But they obviously felt like the shoulder was better, and decent enough for him to go out and play. I think there was probably more of a trust factor there on the road, particularly when Charles got in the game. I thought they rotated him in the second half. You're trying to protect that lead a little bit. You're probably looking for a little more security there. But I mean, they're rotating. They have no problem rotating those guys. As for Jacoby, I just think he's another example of a guy who's getting better every week. I mean, I think it's not just, he's a big hitter. That's very clear. But I think he's getting better in terms of understanding where he's supposed to be. And he obviously has some trust because, I mean, they put him out there in critical situations. And that's a credit to the culture that they've created over there and a mindset that defensive side of the ball has in the coaching staff that says, we're going to do this, period. We're not going to do this if it's a blowout. We're not going to do it only in this situation or that situation. We're going to rotate you. And they have no hesitation doing it. And as a result of that, they're continuing to build depth from the front to the back, from the D-line all the way through the secondary.
A guy that knows an awful lot about secondary play, defensive play, and Tennessee football is a VFL himself. We want to welcome onto the show Jonathan Wade here on the Rocky Top Rewind. Jonathan, thanks so much for joining us here tonight, man.
Thanks for having me. See you, Shane.
All right, Jay Wade. I'm going to give you your flowers, man. I'm going to let you have your moment, okay? So here's the situation. Tennessee is scrimmage number one. I believe it was number one, right, Jonathan? In fall camp. Night scrimmage. I'm sitting out where I'm supposed to be because you can't go down there early because you're not supposed to see anything. And right. This guy who knows a little football comes strolling up the ramp and he looks at me and he says, you got no idea how legit this defense is. He said, we've not had one at Tennessee like this in a long, long time. I think you said the D-line was the best ever to play at Tennessee, which I'm not ready to go there yet. But, Jonathan, you saw it early. What is it that you saw that night in August that you liked so much that has translated onto the field of play through four games?
First of all, the energy level. The energy level is it's something that's not up for debate. It's non-negotiable. Every week in the SEC, week in and week out, there has to be a certain level of energy that's brought to the game on defense, or it's just not going to work. You can see that. Now, I'm going to follow that by saying the number one thing is the amount of depth. There's no drop-off once the guys start rolling, like what you were just saying. There's no real – I mean, obviously, there's going to be a drop-off from – you know, certain guys here and there, but there's no major drop off. You know, one of the first major plays was by the number 42 on the defensive line early in the game. And that was the second series. They had already had those guys in, and you don't know. And to see that happening live in that first scrimmage, along with the young talent in the secondary. And to me, I didn't see it. You know, I never see an issue with young talent because young is bliss. You know, they kind of just go. You know, they haven't seen enough to know that they should be afraid of something or they should be concerned. And you mix that with the depth up front, got a recipe for success. I didn't even see the linebackers. So having that said, I mean, it was going to be something spectacular once it all came together.
When you say you didn't see them, you didn't pay any attention to them? It was all about the D-line in that scrimmage?
No, they weren't practicing.
Okay, you just saw the D line going. Oh, they were out. I guess they didn't.
Right?
They didn't
yeah, they were thing. Out.
I got
so
you.
I didn't even see them. Like Peely, I didn't know. Yeah, I did. I mean, I know I saw him walking around, but I didn't know he wasn't practicing that week I was there. Oh my gosh,
dude, that's been one guy where I mean, last year obviously you had a numbers issue. Like you had Beasley, you felt good about, but it's like bringing in Keenan Peely. It's like okay, it's a guy that's been in college forever. Dealt with some injuries, but, you know, he's kind of fitting this mold. You know, he went out, and, like, you didn't really understand how much you were missing until you saw him play this year. And, oh, my gosh, he's instinctive. He's quick. He shoots the alley. He's got that mean streak in him. I think he's been – I mean, Jermall McCoy, who we spoke about, and I want to get your thoughts on Jermall McCoy at corner. I think, you know, me and Brent think he's been the best addition. But Keenan Peely, dating back to last transfer portal cycle, I mean, he's been incredible.
When you've got guys like 7 and 11, they got to make a shirt out of that 7-11, the linebacking core. When you've got guys like that in the middle of the field coming downhill, Peely looks like he fills gaps fast. He matters. Yeah, you don't understand how important that is until it's not there. Here's something I was just thinking, just in addition to the D-line and the depth, right? When we played, this is years ago, we played Notre Dame. You remember this. We went up there, and the coach was very smart. He had just came from the New England Patriots. We had a very good D-line then, Jesse Mahalona, Jason Hall. We had an extremely good defensive line at the time. He ran screens the first four plays of the game. Why did he run screens? To wear down the deep. That wouldn't work with us.
No.
It's like a hockey deal. I mean, it's just
right.
It's in waves, and it doesn't
right.
It doesn't slow down. I mean, if you're an offensive lineman, you're like, okay, they just rotated guys out. All right, they just got their starters out of the game on this drive here. All right, we got a chance to make a little hay. All right, the second team guys. Well, those guys are pretty good. Okay, they just rotated them out. And then they bring in this Jackson Moy guy. I mean, who is he, right?
Right. And
two tackles for loss. I mean,
tons of energy.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen – they don't have John Henderson or Albert Hainsworth on this team. Okay, they don't have one of those. They don't have a Leonard Little on this team. I love James Pierce, but he's not there in terms of that deal. I've never seen a defensive line, Jonathan, that they're going to roll a Baker's dozen. You're going 13 deep. And the drop-off is not even really recognizable. I mean, Jason Jenkins gets a safety last night. I think, what did he play? He played seven snaps?
Seven snaps, half a sack or whatever, a TFL and a half. And we're talking about that 12 to 13 on the defensive line. He's that 13th or 14th option, too. That's Jason Jenkins, seven snaps.
It makes everything else easier. Like even for Peely and the other linebacker, like their reads, what they get, what they're seeing in front of them. There's no drop off. They're not, you know, it's not that this lineman does it this way, and you know these guys aren't. No, there's no drop off, so they get to play free. The secondary is getting the same rush. They get to play free and get to play loose every play, play in and play out. That makes a world of difference. World of difference. Tim Banks has built this defense the exact way he wanted to, and it's showing.
Yeah, he's built it to wear down offensive fronts and just beat on them all game long and then turn a bunch of athletes loose back behind them. Speaking of athletes, I think Jermaine McCoy's story is one of the more interesting stories, not just at Tennessee, but kind of in football, okay? Yeah. Here's a kid coming out of high school. He's a receiver from Texas.
He goes
to Oregon State to be a receiver, and they flip him over and say, hey, why don't you play defensive back? I don't know if you ever heard a story like this, Jonathan, where they take a receiver and they move him to defensive back and say, hey, let's see how you play at corner. He has a great first year. He transfers to the SEC, and he's a shutdown corner. I mean, he's Tennessee's best corner, and the guy's a dude. I mean, like, it's a pretty amazing transformation. I know you've spent some time with him. You've talked to him, some, that whole group. What stands out to you about his mental makeup and what he can do as a corner?
Practice is all business for him. So when it's game time, there's no let's go. He practices the same exact way he plays with the same intensity. Obviously, they're not tackling and things like that, but it's serious to him. It's not joke around. It's not recess. He soaks up information. He obviously has he's bigger than you think until you know, when I first saw him, I didn't know he was going to be that big. Not that he's huge, but he's just really good size. And he's got all of the tools that you'll need, but it's those extra things. Like, he's not someone that you're ever going to be concerned about off the field. He's there on time. He's never late. He sits in the front. He's one of those guys, and it shows up. You know, and if you take the confidence that he has, and if you continue to put it on film like what he's doing, I think it's going to be undeniable that he's one of the best corners in the SEC. And he's just got to keep doing. He doesn't need to do anything more than what he's doing right now.
Jonathan, what have you seen from that nickelback spot for Tennessee, the star? They've been kind of playing 50-50 with Christian Harrison and Boo Carter. Boo Carter went out early last night and didn't come back, so a lot more opportunities for Christian Harrison. We know who his father is. Very much an afterthought until this year, and then he's the starter because Jordan Thomas is out for the year. What does he bring to the table? What have you seen from him over the course, and Boo Carter as well, over the course of the first couple of games?
The star is such a interesting position because that guy's got to be able to do a multitude of things. Having that said, that's going to be tough on any freshman just because you got to understand the defense before you can even start to do those multitude of things, you know, bluffing and acting like you're doing this and showing that you're doing something else and still holding your assignments and your leverage and blah, blah, blah. Until you find the right guy, which in that spot, a lot of things matter because the matchup matters, how the defense is scheming that week matters. It's always kind of a what's better, a corner there or a linebacker type of guy. Having that said, they are two different people. It was interesting to watch their practice, you know. That guy's a free guy to make a lot of plays, and you don't want that guy kind of in the wrong place because being in the wrong place can jeopardize the entire defense. So Christian brings you an element of maturity in that aspect. Boo brings the element of instant excitement. The things that Boo's going to do, you can't really coach, which is why he was the way, you know, ranked the way he was and viewed the way he was coming out of high school. You know, he's a guy that can do anything on the football field. So you kind of want to make sure that guy knows what he's doing before he just gets out there and goes. Because once you get out there and go and you see yourself make a play as a young guy, nobody can tell you anything after that. So you want to make sure we got the really good young guy going the right direction. And I know at times that's tough for a young guy, but once you got them steered the right direction, you can take your hands off. You know, I mean, they have to steer Eric Berry the right direction too. Everybody has to be steered the right direction when it comes to college and this level of play because the game is different. But I think they're both really good, and they both do well. So to me, they roll a lot of guys. It made sense to roll those guys. I mean, they roll a ton of people.
Yeah.
Jonathan, as a corner, how much fun would it have been to play behind a defensive line that went 13, 14 people deep? How much better is their life back there because of what they are, that what they have help wise in front of them?
Night and day different. When the quarterback has time to throw consistently, receivers and quarterbacks can get on the same page throughout a football game. You know, they may not start off hitting it, but by the end of the game, if they continue to have time and they continue to go back to the now iPads on the sideline and they can see what's going on, they have time to get this kind of this chemistry together throughout the course of the game. Having that said, if you don't have that and you're constantly under duress as a quarterback, not only are you not comfortable enough just to throw a good ball, but you're not thinking about – you're thinking about staying safe. You're thinking about where the next shot is coming from. You're not thinking about trying to make this read and anticipate this throw that you have to make. So it makes a world of difference when you've got fresh bodies rolling in like this. I mean, this needs to be studied. However they've done this, it's amazing. It's wonderful to see. It's really good that, you're asking about that scrimmage. Watching it live like that, the amount of bodies physically rolling in and out, the other teams see it too. It's like, man, they got more guys coming in different jerseys.
It goes back to, you know, Brent, you talk about all the time, you know, roster management and retention and all that. You get a buy-in of that group. Well, first of all, you recruit the right caliber of player, get them on campus, you know, coach them up, strength conditioning, and then get them to buy into the vision of like, hey, you might not be playing 50 snaps a game. Sometimes you will. Pierce did last night, but you might not be playing 50 snaps a game, but you're going to play a lot, and you can play early because this is how I do it, and we're going to be effective. And I just think that's something that's kind of been building over the years, especially with that group up front, and now we're kind of seeing it. I know we can't have you on here for the entire show, but I want to go back to the star position because I'm intrigued. You mentioned sometimes it's a corner, sometimes it's a safety body. Typically here at Tennessee, it's been more of a safety body. In the NFL, it's more of a corner body. I know it goes on what you're trying to accomplish defensively and sometimes the matchup. For that position for you, do you think what works best, corner body or safety body?
Ask John Harbaugh. He's got a 6'4 one. Hamilton, he rolls down to play nickel. Charles Woodson, when he was the defensive player of the year, he was a nickel. He's 6'1 plus. I don't know. To me, it's the football player. It's the one that understands the position, meaning like I understand my assignment and now I can go above and beyond the X's and O's. That guy is the best. We've got another guy that rolls into that spot. I can't call his name, and I hope he doesn't hit. Number 37. He's like 6'3. He plays the star too. That would be a totally different look. But yeah. Now if you imagine blitzing that looks and feels different to the offense sometimes. So it's just all about like the player, I think, the one that can make that position work for them the best, to be honest. It's a linebacker, it's a corner. You're a linebacker one down, you have to line up like a corner, but based off the play, you have to now be a linebacker instantly and know what to do. Versus maybe a pulling lineman. So there are a lot of different things that go on with that position.
And then you might get matched up on somebody running a seam on you, you know, and you got to cover, you got to play coverage, you know, that
Absolutely.
Way.
Absolutely.
It's just really, it is really complicated. It's far beyond my football scope for sure. So Tennessee's defense has obviously been great for four games. You're in a rhythm, you're rolling along. Now you got an open date. If you're Tim Banks, if you're Rodney Garner, linebacker coach William Inge, Willie Martinez in the secondary, what are you working on this week? What are you doing to stay in rhythm? What do you see out of them? Is there another step there? What's the next step for this group? What do you want? What would you be working on this week as you have a bye before you get ready to go back into conference play at Arkansas?
Honestly, turnovers. Not that that's not a boring, you know, everybody, obviously we have to focus on turnovers, but if turnovers aren't actually the number one focus, you're misguided. And I think there's never enough that you can do focus-wise because we always have to scheme. We have to scout. We've got to make sure our alignments and our assignments are correct. But I would really focus on turnovers, just nonstop talking about it, running extra. I would build the drills and stuff around turnovers just to put it on their mind this bye week. Like, geez, why do we – now we go into the next game with kind of that on our mind, that on our focus, because who do we have next?
Arkansas.
Bye week in Arkansas.
Yeah, we're right back into it. And if we get stagnant – the one thing that's not going to keep leave you stagnant is turnovers on defense. If we are getting the ball away from the offense, we won't miss a beat at all. And I think that's the last thing that we need. I mean, that's the next step for us. We're going to hurry the passer. We're going to rush. We're also going to have tipped balls, which are opportunities. We're going to have running backs that have the ball loose. Like, we need to find ways to come up with a multitude of turnovers. What if we run into another game where the defense on the other team is just as good? Find ways to help the offense out.
Well, they certainly did that last night. Sudden change. They handled both of those situations brilliantly as a defense. They got the ball right back. With a couple of great plays, which goes to the culture and the mentality that you saw in that scrimmage and you've been talking to me about since that day. So, going to be fun to watch. I know as a former Vol defensive guy, offense has been fun the last few years. You like that. But I know there's some pride in getting to watch what this defense has done to start this year, particularly last night. My man, it's good to see you. I appreciate you taking the time with us, all right?
Same to you. You guys have a good one. Go Vols.
All right, thanks. There he is, Jonathan Wade. He breaks it down now. I'm telling you, he looked at me and he goes, you got no idea. I'm sitting on a table right there at gate 21, right where you go down where the recruits are. He comes walking out. He's like, you got no idea. I said, well, I think they're pretty good. They got some depth. He goes, you got no idea. He goes, I don't know names. I just know numbers. And they just kept rolling more numbers out there.
Yeah.
They just kept throwing more numbers out there. And I'd ask somebody, who's that? They go, he's a freshman. Who's that? He's a 6-year guy. They look the same. I don't see any difference between the two. He was blown away with that first scrimmage of what they look like.
So far, so good. Tennessee defense certainly been the story of this football team. There's been splash plays. There were some splash and explosive plays for the offense the other night. You know, Brew McCoy, Dante Thornton, but this Tennessee defense has been really good, and we'll see how long this good play can last, hopefully all season long. We'll continue to take some of your questions. We'll break down Tennessee-Oklahoma, what this means moving forward, all that and more. Grant Ramey's going to come up here in the next couple of minutes. All that and more as we continue on here with the Rocky Top Rewind. It is presented by our friends over at Spivey King & Spivey LLP. You got a problem? Let them find the solution for you. That's TN Trial Lawyers. They specialize in criminal offense, family law and personal injury, divorce, custody, alimony, assault, so many different things, car accidents. If you have a need, they can help you. 80 years of combined experience, Spivey King and Spivey LLP provides representation throughout the state and federal courts of Northeast Tennessee. The firm has a vast amount of trial experience. Practice has been in place for 43 years. This specific partnership with Matthew A. Spivey, J. Matt King, Richard A. Spivey, been in place since 2012. Partners who are energized for today's modern legal demands. They practice primarily in Northeast Tennessee, the Tri-Cities of Sullivan County, Grant Ramey's country right there, Hawkins County, Washington County, and surrounding areas. They've been rated by super lawyers with real trial experience. Whether you've been injured in a car accident, need help with a divorce, help with custody of your children, or have been accused of a crime, Spivey King and Spivey LLP is here to help you. You get a free consultation by picking up the phone and dialing 423-245-4185, 423-245-4185 for a free consultation, or you can go check them out at SpiveyKingAndSpiveyLOP.com. SpiveyKingAndSpiveyLOP.com. If you got a problem, let them find a solution for you. That is TN Trial Lawyers. I want to welcome you guys back here to a Rocky Top Rewind Sunday evening presented by our friends over at Spivey King and Spivey LLP. Appreciate you guys for watching us here on the YouTube channel, over on the website as well. If you guys have any questions, go ahead and send those in. I'm marking them, and we will answer your questions here in a matter of moments. Grant Ramey joining the show now here as well. Brent Hubbs, Tennessee, a big win again, 25-15 over Oklahoma, heading into the bye week with a ton of momentum.
Yeah, certainly. We've talked a ton about the defense, and we'll get into some offensive stuff here and continue to break down the game. But I want to ask both of you guys, because I was not in the postgame locker room setting. I was not on the field. Grant, I know you wrote about it. Eric, you were in there for the post game. You were on the field and saw it. Were you guys taken aback by the emotions of Josh Heupel? Were you surprised in any way? Or did you kind of sense a big exhale was coming once this game was over. Grant, I'll start with you.
First of all, Hubbard, it's good to see you. I think that's the fastest we've ever done a trip because I didn't even see you in the state of Oklahoma. We were both there. We were separated by about 15, 20 feet, I guess, of press box top to bottom, but I didn't see you. So it's good to see
you. I literally tried to find Brent one time. It was after the game. I went to Glenn Thacks. I said, hey, where's Hubs? Said he's in the radio room. So I literally went up there. By the time I got up there, Hubs was already down. I mean, I literally didn't even see him.
We were driving back in the middle of who knows where, Oklahoma, and I think I told Eric, and it feels like today because it feels like it was just hours ago, I said, I think that's the most emotion we'll ever see from Josh Heupel because of a lot of things, because it's Oklahoma, because he hadn't been back, because it had been 10 years, because that game meant so much to him, even if he wasn't going to say it and put himself in that spotlight and make it about Josh Heupel going back to Oklahoma, because he lost his mom recently and what his mom meant, and that hug he had with his dad. Going into the locker room and the tears in his eyes and the video that Tennessee put out too from the locker room where he was struggling to get through that speech without, you know, choking back tears. And I think Josh has just always been somebody from the moment he got here struck me as somebody who kind of plays the right chord. Like there's not a lot of normal people in his business because these guys are extreme perfectionists and workaholics and crazy competitors, and they're compensated at a crazy number. And they're just not, there's not a lot of normal people. And it's always felt like Josh is just a normal guy. And I thought he handled the entire week and even the post game kind of right where you thought he would, where he's not going to make it about himself, and he doesn't have to because his players know who he is and knows what that means to him. And he's such a player's coach, and I think he's built that bond with them, that rapport over the last however many years he's been with whatever player you're talking about, and they want to go out and play for him. And I think you saw that emotion from him because he knew that his players had that little bit of extra that he was talking about in the locker room.
Yeah, I think the reason you saw emotional Josh Heupel last night was for two reasons, one being that right there. I mean, he said all the right things, and I truly do believe he's about it. He's about ball, right? I mean, he's about this team. He's about coaching. You know, his former coach and boss, you know, Bob Stoops put out a statement, you know, last weekend saying, I don't want to take any interviews. I don't want it to be about me. Well, you know, you kind of made it about yourself in that situation. Right. That's not what Josh Heupel's about, but I think he got emotional, you know, when Nico takes that football over there to him as soon as the clock strikes zero and puts it in his chest and gives him a hug. And, you know, you saw the video in the locker room when he's talking, and he's like, you guys know I didn't try to make it about me, but I appreciate you forgiving me a little bit more this week. I think that's one of the main reasons why he was emotional. Number two, you know, he lost his mom a couple months ago. This is the first football season without his mom, and he referenced that in the post-game press conference, Brent. And, you know, he said she looks forward to all of them. She was really looking forward to this one, and how could you not as a parent, right, especially when it ended poorly in a place where you called home. He thanks so many different people for being a part of her life, you know, around here, and this is, you know, she lived in the area as well, and so I just think it was because of those two major things. But it was a guy that went in there with a goal. It was to win this football game, and he accomplished it. And somebody asked him, too, like, does it almost feel like it's a deep sigh of relief? It's a breath of air, like you can move on. Like, I don't even think it was that. I just think that he was enjoying everything that kind of encompassed being there. And obviously it was because he got the win that it helped out in that regard.
I think there was something else, too. Like, he took over at Tennessee in such a bad position. And they didn't win that game last night because of a fluke. They controlled that game start to finish. I mean, they were the better football team, and they played like it. And I think it's kind of a full circle moment where what he's built this program, this Tennessee program, to in this short amount of time, taking it over where he took it over, I mean, that's one of the most impressive, probably the most impressive win we've seen from him, maybe Alabama 2022, you could argue. But it's not just this team and the way it won, but I think it's also for him personally to go from being fired and to kind of having to, you know, start from scratch and kind of go outside of that Stoops family that he had coached under and played under and the Oklahoma and all that stuff and kind of build himself up to where he was and to the point where he's built a program at Tennessee that's winning at a high rate, that's, you know, going the right way, that's doing everything you want it to do. And it just so happened that it culminated right there with everything going on.
Yeah, I was just a little bit surprised at just how raw he was because he's such a word salad at every press conference. And I thought there was a real chance that he might just kind of come out and say, hey, I'm not going to talk about that this week. I'm going to answer it one time and I'm going to move on. And he just, he was so human this week. And listen, we know him as a human. We've seen him around. I've seen him around his family. I've seen him around kids. I know that there's human things about him. And he is very unorthodox in that way as a football coach. He's not a football robot at all. Right. I mean, he wants to, you know, get to his kids' games and do those things with him. It's just when there's a camera around, he is a robot, and it's a word salad deal. And that was just not the case here, which I was a little bit, I guess I was more taken aback by it than you guys were. Just the fact that, one, he allowed it. He allowed the camera in the locker room to do that and just kind of rolled through it that way. I was just a little bit, surprised by all those things.
Do you think maybe it's because he thought, I can't avoid it anymore? Like, I'm going to have to address this because they're in the league now. This is going to be a however many times you're going to play them. Like, it's going to become a normal thing. Let's just go ahead and
I think he understands it, too. I mean, like, everybody's got a job to do. This is a big deal, whether it's a big deal to him or not, which we know it is. Like, this is a big deal to college football. And so, yeah, I think it's kind of you got to hit it head on, essentially, at least this year, and kind of it won't be built up like this for years to come. It'll always be something, but, you know, just kind of knock it away like they did over the weekend.
Well, and I think that, you know, it was probably a little bit, he was more bothered by the questions in July at SEC Media Day, because it was still 3 months away. Like, when the week got here, it was the unavoidable.
Yeah.
But do we really have to go into every media room at SEC Media Day and that be the only topic about a game at the end of September, when in his mind he's trying to figure out how to build this team in fall camp at that point? So I think he was more annoyed by it then than he was this week, knowing that it was the story. It's okay if it's the story this week. It doesn't have to be the story year round, right, Grant?
It's like my kids my son starting to put together his Christmas list about a week after Christmas. And I'm like, let's just put a pin in that until maybe October, November, something like that. Then there's a time and a place for that, and we'll address it then. So I think it's something like that, where it's the time and the place. He wasn't going to, you know, look too far down the road and make it a distraction, or look past people and disrespect something, or, you know, keep his team's attention on the here and now and worry about that when it got here. And when it got here, he handled it pretty well.
Staying on with Josh Heupel, but kind of moving subjects here, you know, Daryl wants to know, what would Heupel learn from this win? Is it as simple as, you know, when one phase of the football game is humming, lean on it, steer into the win, because that's kind of what he did there? What can Josh Heupel learn from a win like this, which, going back to what Grant said, arguably one of his biggest wins here at Tennessee?
What I would learn is just that. Take the air out of the ball when you need to take the air out of the ball. You don't have to be the guy that's throwing it deep once every possession. You don't have to be the guy that's trying to make the most explosive plays. If you've got a run game that can run it 152 yards on 52 carries or whatever the number was and control the game, if you got a defense that swarms the way this defense does, if you're creating turnovers, if you're up 19-3 late in the first half on the road, it's almost kind of like a NFL approach. Just win the football game. It doesn't matter what it looks like. It doesn't matter week to week how it plays out. Just find a way to score more points than the other team. And if you can do that and you can keep kind of moving that down the road, then you're going to be in a good place later in the season when these other big games start popping up.
And Grant, Eric, jump in here too. I think that is the hardest thing for offensive-minded assistants who become head coaches to learn how to play. I think for defensive coordinators who become head coaches, their hardest thing is to learn – game management, clock management, because they're not thinking about managing a 2-minute drill as a defensive coordinator, right? It's see ball, hit ball, sick them, get the ball back type deal. Whereas the offense is you're doing a little bit different. But when you're in the offensive coordinator's seat, I would imagine your first thought process is, let's go score on every play. And the head coach is in the headset going, hey, we need to help our defense out here. I need you to eat a little time off the clock. Okay. Can we slow down tempo? Can we do this? And the head coach is telling the offensive coordinator, whoa, whoa, whoa. So when the offensive coordinator moves into that head coaching seat, isn't there a learning curve to, hey, I've got to think holistically about my football team and not just about my 11 offensive guys putting up big numbers and we're throwing it all over a lot and playing pinball with everybody?
I think the first time we saw it was last year against Texas A&M, and that was the first time they had only scored, you know, under 20 points in a Josh Heupel win or whatever that stat was at the time. He really didn't have a choice then. The offense wasn't doing what the offense wanted to do. They had to rely on defense in that game, and they had to rely on special teams. They had to rely on turnovers, whatever else. This time at Oklahoma, I mean, he had options because you saw him play out. That pass to Dante Thornton in the first half, that 66-yard touchdown, the chunk plays he had to Brew McCoy. There's other stuff down the field that they didn't hit, they could have hit. There's penalties that brought one back. Like, he had that option to go out and try to hit that explosive play and to kind of break Oklahoma's back. But you can also kind of break a team's back if you can go an eight-play scoring drive where it's eight straight runs against a really good run defense. Like, I don't know how good Oklahoma is or terrible offensively, but that's a pretty tough front seven. And for you to go down the field like that with Dylan Sampson the way they did, like they were struggling to, it felt like, to establish a run, and then on that possession to do it that way, I think that's going to be pretty demoralizing for the other team. And I think it shows maturity, whatever growth, that Heupel's willing to do whatever it takes to win, however he's got to win, whatever it looks like. It doesn't matter. Just win the football game.
I think that's arguably the biggest stretch in the football game, right? I mean, sure, the turnovers were huge and the big plays were fun. And I mean, there was a lot to celebrate. Don't get me wrong, but you're right. I mean, again, I've been referencing this all day. 7 attempts, 7 yards, 1 yard per carry. That was Tennessee's run game in the first quarter. Okay, then DeShaun Bishop got it rolling in the second quarter. And then Dylan Sampson came in, and Sampson kept it going. And then that drive, it's kind of like, okay, so we found we got a little bit of rhythm here. Let's put it down their throat. Let's go. Let's go. Let's score, and let's play Tennessee football. And, yeah, Nico, the hand of the football off to Dylan Sampson every single play. And Tennessee marched right down the field and scored and took the, you know, increased that lead to where, I mean, at that point, you went from 12-3 to 19-3, and it felt like it was really out of reach for an Oklahoma offense that did nothing to that point. So I thought that was the biggest stretch in the football game, arguably. And Brent allowed Heupel and Halsley to say, okay, well, here in the second half, let's change some things up a little bit. Let's just go concentrating and getting the win. Without that touchdown, they can't do that.
Yeah, I mean, listen, they're playing the middle eight the way you're supposed to, right? Score the final 4 minutes of the first half, and you're hoping that you come out and score the first 4 minutes of the second half and really put it away. It didn't go that way to start the second half, but to control the clock and finish it that way was a real kick in the Oklahoma's teeth going in the locker room. And for the fans, like, okay, wait a minute. We're no longer stuffing them in the run like we were. Now, if they get balance, what are they going to be able to do to us? You know, I thought that was a stretch. And I listen, I've been talking about DeShaun Bishop. I like DeShaun Bishop. I think he's done great things. The trust that they had in DeShaun Bishop coming off the goal line after Joshua Joseph forces that fumble to get the ball back. I mean, those three first downs that they got there that turned that just flipped the field and led to the safety. I mean, that was old school General Nealon game maximum football at its finest right there. And it leaned on a guy that Grant and DeShaun Bishop that everybody asked Josh Heupel at the end of spring practice, hey, I mean, do you got to go get a running back out of the portal because you don't know what you have in Peyton Lewis and you don't know what you have in Cam Seldon? And they said, no, we're going to go with what we have in DeShaun Bishop. And he was proving them right.
I think as a coach, you want to have as many different ways to win a football game as you can win a football game. And if you can have Jalen Hyatt, 2022 Alabama, running past safeties all night, go for it. Throw it deep every time. But you can't back yourself into a corner like when you're backed up against the goal line. You better have options. And if it's not Dylan Sampson, you better know what you're getting out of DeShaun Bishop, out of whoever your number two guy is. I thought he was extremely impressive. And I'm the president of the Dylan Sampson fan club. I don't think he should ever come off the field. I think he's that good of a football player. But what DeShaun Bishop showed there was it felt kind of like, you know, Dylan Sampson at Kentucky last year where they needed that drive to put a team away. Like, you want to have that – you don't want to paint yourself into a corner where I'm living and dying by explosive plays. I better have options at running back, guys that I know are going to get a first down, find a way to get a first down, even maybe when those yards aren't there. And that was very kind of Dylan Sampson-esque, that what we saw at Kentucky last year. Was kind of, I felt similar to DeShaun Bishop at times at Oklahoma last night, where it was just like tough runs, just find a way to move the sticks and then go from there.
Yeah, he had Tennessee's first run of more than 10 yards. Tennessee only had two, I think, in the game. They didn't have many, but he had a 12-yard run on that drive. He had an 8-yard run. He had a 7-yard run. You know, me and Matt were talking about on the post-game mini pod last night. I mean, he's kind of what sparked it, and then Sampson came in and did what Sampson does. I thought it was a really, really good quarter there in the second quarter for both those guys. And I wholeheartedly, I think Cam Seldon's going to be a good player, but Deshaun Bishop deserves 10 touches a game right now. That is for sure. A couple of questions here, Brent. I want to get your take on it because, of course, you had Jason Swain down on the field last night. A lot of talk about the turf, the playing surface last night. Saw a really, really bad injury, obviously, on Oklahoma's part, but saw some guys slipping and sliding around. Squirrel White did at one point in time. What was your thoughts on the playing surface last night at Oklahoma?
Well, when I saw the pictures of it before you got to Oklahoma, the week before, and it was just – it was brown and awful looking. Yep. And so I was like, okay. And you get there to the game, and it was lush and green, and you're like, well, wait a minute. They didn't paint it because it wasn't spray painted. So, like, what happened? And I think they overseeded it with ryegrass and fertilized it and watered the heck out of it, and that was ryegrass that came through. And if I'm not an ag specialist, but if anybody knows ryegrass is pretty slick. That's why you overseed in a blend with Bermuda. You don't do a whole field in ryegrass. People put ryegrass in to keep it green in the wintertime, you know, throughout the rest of the fall. But it can get slick. And I think it was just such an overseed in ryegrass that there was so much ryegrass in there that it was slick. It was a little bit tall, I thought. When I walked on it, but it was like, it was full. I mean, at South Carolina in 22, that was sand. I mean, there was green sand on that field everywhere. That was a bad field. That one pregame didn't feel bad. Of course, I'm not out there cutting, trying to, you know, backpedal or do anything like that. I'm just walking on it. I'm like, okay, this is pretty full and feels pretty good. But looking at some of the divots in it, I think it was pretty soft and it was obviously slick from the ryegrass.
There was one that far end zone that Oklahoma warmed up in. I mean, it looked pretty. Then they came out there to warm up just for the game, and then it was like
disappearing paint.
That is gone. A bad look before kickoff. Yeah. Let's run through some questions here. We got a couple of minutes left here on the show. Brent, how many, to your knowledge, how many guys travel? What's that travel roster look like? And I do know that it changes. Like for the Charlotte game 2 weeks ago, it was different than what happened this past weekend.
It's been 70. I want to say they may have extended that to 74. The conference may have changed that to 74. It was 70 for years that you could travel to conference games. I think they've upped that to 74 or 75, I think. I'll have to double check that. But it's not any more than 75, but it was 70 for years that you could travel. And the home team can only dress 70. And again, that's – When you know Lance Hurd's not going to play, Grant, you got to put somebody in that place for 70 for depth purposes, and then the league makes you tell everybody, hey, he's out, because if you don't make the trip, you got to report him as out on Friday night.
It's a little bit of 53-man NFL roster. You better plug somebody in there that's got some value because space is limited.
On that note, Lance Hurd, ankle, what's the latest, if anything, do we know of? Of course, the bye week's going to help there. And I know you spoke on this a little bit earlier, Brent, but you got Hurd. What are your thoughts on Campbell? I mean, again, neither one of you guys are doctors, but I mean, Campbell, we know it's going to be something that they got to watch as the year goes on, but I mean, you can't just play 30 snaps a football game. I mean, that's, you got to figure something out there at right tackle. I'm not saying bench him, but like, what do you think Tennessee should do, I guess, if you had control of the situation?
I don't think you're going to go in and tell those guys, hey, we don't need you anymore. I mean, because you can't play more than 35 snaps, and you're not going to tell Lance Hurd, hey, we're mad because you weren't ready to go for Oklahoma. Then we're out of here. You're going to try to get those guys well. They hope the open date does that for you. But Grant, I said this earlier on the show. I just think you have to be, committed to building depth, and you have to use this bye week for the Bennett Warrens and the Jesse Perrys to give them as much run as you can get to try to get them comfortable.
Yeah, I think you look at the bye week as what's our biggest questions and how do we find those answers. And you're not going to find them in a couple of weeks, but you better start working toward those answers. And so it's a really well-timed bye week because it's been a fast four starts and they've had a couple tough tests. And obviously going to Oklahoma is a big deal. I think you got to figure that out. That's the biggest question. You got to answer that. How can you get John Campbell to stay on the field more? How can you get Lance Hurd back and healthy or whatever the deal is there and get him on the field and keep him on the field? Because you've passed a couple tests and now it kind of feels like if you take care of business, you're going to be in that conversation as long as the year plays out, if you're taking care of your business. Now, how can you get this team to address those issues and strengthen itself while also keeping its eyes down the road and focused on, you know, what they can do if they can take care of business and win football games. I think the distractions and stuff like that, you're going to have to figure out, you know, a way to handle that down the road. But on the field, first of all, the biggest question to me is that tackle, because I like the interior offensive line. I like the quarterback, the running back room, wide receivers, tight ends, defense. Like, they've answered a lot of questions over these first few weeks. Now, how do you answer that tackle question? Because you can't have these guys free running at your quarterback and strip sacks and changing games and stuff like that we saw at Oklahoma. You got to find a way to fix that, because you got some tough competition coming down the pike here.
First official practice, I believe, is on Tuesday, but your favorite poster wants to know, starting five and first three off the bench right now.
Oh, my goodness. Rapid I haven't fire. Even thought about basketball in months. Zakai Ziegler, Jemiah Mayshak, Felix Akpara, Chaz Lanier, Igor Milicic. I don't know. Is that even five?
That's five.
First three off the bench, Jarlin Stone Dubar, Jordan Gainey.
Gotta go big man here.
Gotta go big, yeah.
Gotta go big man, JP Estrella. All right, there you go.
Dante Thornton, Javonte Payton vibes a little bit. Yeah, three receptions.
Total vibes.
Three receptions, two touchdowns in the opener last night. Two receptions, had a touchdown. He's playing with some confidence right now, and you just continue to go back. I mean, they have so many weapons at wide receiver. I thought Brew. I know we're talking Dante Thornton right here from Ross, but I thought Brew. And Brent, you wrote about this. I thought Brew looked great last night. That catch was great. His block to help Squirrel earlier in the football game was good. He looks explosive. He looks smaller. I guess leaner would be the right word. But, of course, him and Squirrel and Thornton and, of course, Chris Brazel. Tennessee's got an embarrassment of riches, but Thornton has been making some big plays, and this is kind of what they envisioned when they got him last year, right?
Well, it's been his career. Yeah. I mean, that's what he did at Oregon. He's averaging nearly 36 yards a catch right now. He's got seven receptions and three touchdowns. That's total Javonte Payton vibes at this point for sure. I think that it's how much can you continue to go with him, and how much more can he continue to grow in the offense? Somebody asked me, I think it was the Friday morning radio show in Nashville with Ramon Foster and Will and Kayla and that crew. Now, hey, give me your prediction for the game. You know, once you got to the stadium on Saturday and once he kind of got that first catch, you're like, this is a total Brew McCoy game. You know, I mean, it just felt like physical. You're going to have to win some one-on-one battles, physical, Grant. It just, you're like, yeah, this is a Brew McCoy game. And he showed up big time, I thought.
I have no idea how he ran that ball down. I mean, we thought that was overthrown from the jump. Not overthrown a ton, but just not where you thought he was going to run it down. And somehow he caught it all fingertips on the back fifth of the football. Like, I don't think he grabbed that much of the football before he – so that was crazy impressive. Just the physicality he has when he finishes those runs downfield. I mean, seeking contact. That dude, if anybody craves contact, it's Brew McCoy, and it sets a tone. And – if these teams are going to load boxes and dare Nico to throw them, like, that's the importance of the tackles, because on that Dante Thornton, you saw a clean pocket where Nico stepped into the pocket, set his feet, and threw an absolute laser in stride to Dante right where he needed it, right out in front. The dude doesn't break stride, and he's gone. Like, if you're going to load boxes and you're going to dare these guys to beat you on the outside, they're going to beat you on the outside because they've got talent out there. And they've got a guy, if he's got a clean pocket, he's going to step up and he's going to throw absolute missiles. And it's been like that since day one, Chattanooga. He was throwing those things exactly. He couldn't have walked out there and placed those balls any better. So yeah, that's even more so the reason you got to figure out your tackle positions and have those clean pockets, have those opportunities.
Well, and Eric, when you run those deep squares like that or those deep crossers, I mean, it takes a minute. Because you're lined up out all the way against the sideline, it takes a minute to get into that window, so you've got to have a pocket. Nico's numbers in play action pass are pretty ridiculous in terms of what he's done. Grant, you're exactly right. If you got to be able to protect and hold up, because if you can give him some time with this core receivers in the middle of the football field, it feels like you're either going to force people to drop eight and play light boxes, or you're going to eat them up in the middle of the field if you can protect him long enough.
The throw was incredible. To Grant's point, it feels like he's got a throw or two each and every single game where you're just sitting there like, oh my gosh, that throw was incredible. But back to a point that you made earlier, maybe you wrote about it, Brent. I mean, the play action pass, the run game, the run, that's why you got to stay with it. When it's 7 attempts, 7 yards in the first quarter, you can't go away from it. Why? Well, because that safety was crashing, okay? And that corner's expecting inside help. That safety comes in, and you throw it over the safety's head and throw it inside of the corner, rotten stride. I mean, nobody touched Dante Thornton. Yeah, Brew McCoy also put on some really good tape that we're going to see when he gets drafted this year. That one catch and run where he's, you know, running over a guy, juking a guy, that's going to be a highlight reel on his NFL draft tape for sure. A lot to get into, lots to continue to discuss. We'll do some more of that on the VolQuest podcast on Tuesday morning. We'll answer your questions on the VolQuest mailbag podcast on Thursday. No game coming up this week, so that means no Rocky Top Rewind next Sunday night. We'll be back after the Arkansas game in a couple of weeks, so looking forward to that. So spend Sunday with you and yours and watch some other NFL football maybe this time Sunday night next week. But just because there's no game, Brent Hubbs, there's still plenty going on over at VolQuest.com. Tons of recruiting coverage this week. We'll look at the first four games of the season and kind of do some superlatives and stuff like that. We'll have trail tidbits at some point this week. A lot going on, and we're just gearing up. A third of the way through, but SEC plays here, and this could be a fun year with Tennessee football in terms of maybe the college football playoff. Don't want to miss it over at VolQuest.com.
No, certainly, and that was a big step, I think, moving forward. You got to go take care of business at Arkansas, and you got Florida, but I mean, you can be where you want to be with Alabama and Georgia quickly approaching on the schedule here. I know we're in overtime period right here, but Grant Ramey, I feel bad because I forced you into throwing names out in a hurry in basketball. Cam Carr's name was not thrown out there.
Oh, no, Cam Carr. I'm sorry, Cam Carr.
I feel responsible for not allowing that because I pressured you too fast there. So I'm going to give a little redemption on Cam Carr.
Yeah.
That one's on me. He's in your top eight.
He's going to get his minutes. He's going to get his opportunity. And it's ironic because I saw this on Twitter earlier. I do not know this off the top of my head because that would be weird. But it's Cam Carr, 43 days away from Tennessee basketball actually being back, which is kind of let's just say it's stressful.
And then back in the spotlight
with the thoughts of football in December. It's a really it could be really interesting.
The good thing is we're getting all the road trips out of the way before October 1st. I mean, Tennessee's going to be home for 6 weeks coming up. So I guess that's a good thing.
And hopefully they're not all going to be at night, right?
Right, exactly.
Out the door, 9-3, Grant Ramey. Answer that question.
Yeah, I was wrong, okay? I got regrets. I was wrong. I'm stupid. I'm not known for my intelligence, okay?
Hey, but hey, I had
just my good looks. This is all that's getting me by right here.
Hey, I was 27-17. It was 25-15. I've never been closer.
I picked him like 37-20. Like even I picked him to win, I look stupid. How are they going to give up 20 points?
Appreciate you guys for joining us here on the Rocky Top Rewind. Appreciate Spivey King and Spivey LLP for being the presenting sponsors of this show. Again, if you have a need, pick up the phone and dial 423-245-4185, 423-245-4185, or visit them online. That's at Spivey King and Spivey LLP. For Grant Ramey, big thanks to Jonathan Wade for stopping by the show. Brent Hubbs, I am Eric Kane. Appreciate you guys as always for joining us here on the Rocky Top Rewind every Sunday night during football season away from the byes.